my fault. There's a big difference between the two. I pat his shoulder awkwardly. Bath is wash. I gesture at scrubbing my hair, then my arms. Wash. And more clothes. Really, we need a lot of things. This is okay for now, but it's not a good long-term shelter. He pauses, studying my face.
Gwen, speak.
He taps his mouth and shakes his head.
No.
I know what that means. I'm giving him too much at once. He doesn't understand it. I rub his arm again because touching him's pleasant. I find myself touching him a lot, actually. Any excuse to do it, and I'll touch him several times a day. I know I'm doing it and I should stop, but I don't. Flustered at the realization, I pull back. Sorry. You're doing the best you can and I'm throwing the kitchen sink at you. Let's start smaller.
Gwen, no bathroom?
No. I grimace, because I'm the world's worst teacher. I break off because Vaughn's eyes immediately flare to black, a signal that his mood's changed and something's wrong. I'm learning that black eyes are bad, gold eyes are happy, and deep amber means frisky times. They swirl between colors usually when he's moody and are harder to interpret then, but black is bad, bad, bad. He stiffens a split second later, his fangs bared, and then Vaughn's enormous golden body explodes into the room. Shelves go flying. I skid backwards and then the roof collapses as my dragon flings himself straight up out of the building. The roof crumbles around me, pieces of plaster and ceiling tile falling down amidst the wreckage of the shelves. I cough, waving a hand in front of my face and wincing at the flare of pain that returns. Vaughn? There's no answer. The dragon's gone. I peer up at the now broken roof, waiting to see if he's going to return, but it's quiet. Well, shit. What the hell happened just now? I push my way through the rubble, a little surprised none of it crashed onto me and flattened me. Maybe the force of Vaughn's momentum made it fly out instead of inward. I glance around me at the destruction, and as I do, a broken sheet of drywall topples down to the ground. Maybe not. I give my hair a shake to free it from the worst of the dust and then head outside. A breeze wafts over me, cooling my skin as I glance around, looking for a huge golden body in the air. Vaughn isn't hard to find, though he's not in the air. He's on the ground, a few parking lots over, his attention focused on something brown thrashing on the pavement. As I watch, he pins it with one big clawed foreleg, regards it, and then leans down and snaps it into his jaws. I wince. I think I'm seeing dinner caught in action. It's not the hunting that bothers me as much as the realization that Vaughn's not getting less crazy with the time that passes. He just destroyed our shelter because of an impulsive hunt, and now we're going to have to find somewhere else to stay. More than that, his actions make me realize that I can't go back to Fort Shreveport. Not with him. Not when he could go nuts at the flip of a switch and destroy a building or people without even meaning to. He just doesn't remember anything. Nothing sticks. I knew this, and yet I'm surprised at how achingly hollow it makes me feel. It's not Vaughn's fault. He is who he is. I just wish... I bury those thoughts as he lifts his head, the brown form hanging from his jaws. A deer, maybe? He half flutters, half strides back to me, crossing the distance of two parking lots in a matter of moments. Then he lowers his head and spits the food on the ground in front of me. He rubs his jaw with one leg as if offended, then steps back, watching me. It takes a moment for it to sink in that he's brought it to me. It takes a moment more for it to sink in that it's not a deer. The lump on the ground in front of me is wet with dragon drool from being in Vaughn's mouth, but I don't see spindly deer legs and hide. I see brown fabric, and skin so dirty it's lost all color except the color of dirt. I see filthy hair, and an arm bruised and covered with old scars. It's Mara.
Oh, God,
I whisper aloud. She didn't go to Fort Shreveport after all. She came back and Vaughn ate her. I press my fingers to my mouth, fighting back bile. When his eyes went black, I never imagined. The dragon shifts on his feet, moving closer. He lifts one foreleg, and for a moment, I think he's going to grab me. Instead, one scaly, massive paw gently strokes my hair, petting me. The claws practically curl around my entire face, but he never touches me with them. He just carefully strokes my hair and watches my face, his eyes whirling with emotion. It's like he's waiting for something. When the dirty, slobber-covered mound whimpers, I realize what he's waiting for. Mara's alive, and he's brought her to me. 21. Gwen. I push Vaughn's claws aside and race to her. Are you okay? Mara doesn't answer. She just quivers in place, utterly silent. Her eyes are blank and staring, but they're open. Where are you hurt? I ask, running my hands over her arms and ignoring the pain that shoots up mine. Where did he bite you?
No bite.
Mara manages, gasping with fear. She curls up into a tiny ball and hugs her legs to her chest, the most pitiful human I've ever seen.
No bites yet.
No bites. I frown down at her, confused. A moment later, Vaughn's big claws move to my hair and he starts to pet me again, making that soothing rumble in his chest. I don't understand. He didn't eat her? Does he expect me to? I glance up at him and he lowers his enormous head, peering at my face before nudging me with his nose in a dragonish nuzzle. Show me your teeth, I tell him, scarcely believing this to be true. I put my hands on his mouth, feeling the hard scales that line the edges of his mouth, the leathery lips in this form. I peel one back, even as Mara moans in fear. I ignore her, grimacing wide at Vaughn and gesturing, Show me your teeth. He displays them for me in what should be an utterly terrifying display, but all I see are pearly white fangs, without a hint of blood on them. I lean in and inhale his breath. It's hot and acrid, but it doesn't smell like blood like it does after he's been hunting. I turn to look at Mara again, absently caressing Vaughn's muzzle as I do, piecing things together. There's no denying that Vaughn freaked out. The black eyes don't lie, and I know he can't control them. I don't think he would have burst through the roof if he knew it would have put me in danger. That was definitely all impulse. Even so, he didn't kill Mara. He must have smelled or heard her, but when he got to her, decided not to kill? Instead, he brought her to me. Is it because I asked him not to kill her a few days ago? I look at my dragon and wonder, Did you remember that, Vaughn? Did you remember what I asked? He only knows as my hand again, he can't answer. At my feet, Mara moans. I give Vaughn one last affectionate pat, still reeling with what's going through my mind, and I kneel next to her. He's not going to kill you, I tell her, hoping I'm right. But you need to tell me if you're injured. Terrified eyes focus on me and she slowly shakes her head.
No, not injured, just wet.
Sit up. I add a note of sympathy to my voice because she has to be utterly terrified. A dragon is normally a death sentence. Normally. Unless. A horrifying thought occurs to me. What if Vaughn's getting himself a backup plan? What if she's option B in case it doesn't work out with me? The thought is shocking. Almost as shocking as the hot stab of jealousy that flares in my chest. Damn it, I shouldn't be jealous. He's not my dragon. I don't even want him, right? Funny how things change after a week or so. Before I'd left the fort, I'd have gladly pawned Vaughn off to anyone who wanted him. Wasn't that what I was trying to help Andrea with? Get her to shack up with him so he'd stop being a problem for the fort? Except now the tables have turned a bit, and I'm not liking the feeling at all. I glance over at Vaughn, and the dragon nudges me with his nose. One big foreleg strokes my hair again, and I feel a little better. I haven't been thrown over yet, it seems. I don't know why I should care, but I do. I reach up and pet one of Vaughn's claws, and I tell myself it's to comfort him and not the other way around. Why are you back, Mara? I thought you were going to go to Fort Shreveport. It's safe there.
I was going to,
Mara says in that small, terrified voice of hers.
But it was so far to walk alone, I got scared. I hid nearby hoping you guys would leave soon and I could stay here.
She lets out a small, hiccupy sob.
Everyone knows forts aren't safe.
Any lingering jealousy I feel at her reappearance disappears with that. She's right. As a woman alone, forts aren't safe. Hell, even several women together aren't safe in a fort. Haven't I experienced that in the past? Isn't that why so many of us left Fort Tulsa at once to strike out on our own? We were tired of being prey in a place that should have represented safety. Of course she's not going to trust a stranger who tells her that another fort is safe. Of course she'd rather stay here alone. I'd have done the same thing in her place. I give Vaughn's scaly foot one last pat, and then move out of his embrace, heading to Mara's side. I help her up, ignoring the filth covering her and the dragon drool adding to the mess. I don't know that you're any safer here, I tell her truthfully, helping to straighten her questionable clothing. Vaughn is volatile at best. I don't know how to make him listen to me. She looks at me in surprise.
You don't control him? But you said...
I'm pretty sure I'm safe with him, I amend. I've been with him for days and he won't hurt me. But I don't know if that extends to anyone else at all. Like I said, he's volatile. That's the best word I can think of to describe him.
I don't understand,
Mara says softly, huddling behind me when Vaughn leans in.
How did you make friends with him then?
Are we friends? That's an interesting way to look at things, though I don't know if it's totally accurate. Friends implies that there's a choice in the matter for either party, and I don't know that I had a choice. I don't know that Vaughn did either, or if he feels compelled to grab me because mine has the strongest scent that tickles his nose. I don't know, and I can't ask. At least not yet. Being able to really truly talk with him involves more than I'm willing to give. But a few moments ago, I was jealous that Mara was here and that Vaughn might be interested in her. Mixed signals much, Gwen? The thought plays in my head over and over again. Friends. Huh. But if Vaughn took off and left me alone, choosing Mara over me, I'd be hurt. It's a weird realization to come to. I shouldn't care. But I'm coming to the slow realization that there's a lot of things I should be thinking that I'm not. I wonder if Amy felt this torn between loyalty to the human race and attraction to her dragon. Because when I look at Vaughn, I don't see a scaly monster devourer of humankind, no matter the truth in that. I see a man with unusual skin and horns, unable to speak the language but still human. I see a man whose mind is damaged by the situation he's in, but who touches me reverently and is so protective that I feel safe for the first time in 7 years. Mara's watching me, waiting for an answer. Her expression is impossible to read, but I sense worry and fear. Like it or not, Mayor Gwen comes surging to the forefront for the first time in a week. Can I control the dragon? I look over at Vaughn, studying his eyes. They're doing the mellow swirl of colors that indicates he's relaxed. He's not attacking Mara. He doesn't view her as a threat. Is it because he views her as a potential mate? I hate that my jealous brain goes to that. I should be thinking like dragon girlfriend Gwen and get rid of a potential rival, because what if Vaughn mates her instead of me and she uses him to destroy my fort? Mara's already had a crappy, abusive protector. What if she decides that a dragon is trading up and goes for him? Why does that infuriate me so much? Why is that even on my mind? I'm ashamed such a thought ran through my head. Mara's just trying to survive. It's clear she's been dealt a rough hand and I should feel sympathy for her. I shouldn't be acting like a lioness whose territory has been threatened. Or like a dragon. That one hits a little too close to home. I put a smile on my face, forcing Mayor Gwen back to the surface. You're right. We're friends of a sort. And if he listens to anyone, he listens to me. I can't guarantee that you'll be completely safe, but I think it's going to be okay. Mara offers me a tremulous smile. There's no such thing as completely safe anymore. How right she is. Just stay close to me at all times, okay? Vaughn tends to forget things when his emotions get the better of him. And if he forgets you're a friend, we could be in trouble. Her eyes widen, she automatically steps closer to me. And if his eyes go completely black, get the fuck out of Dodge. I tell her grimly.
What happens when they go completely black?
She whispers. Nothing good. Just trust me. Mara nods. She looks around and then gives me a shrinking glance before gesturing at the nearby pavement.
Can I get my backpack?
Sure. When she doesn't move to get it, I head over a few steps and find that she's practically my shadow, sticking so close that her stink is in my nostrils. I hold my breath and offer her a reassuring smile, then glance over at Vaughn. The dragon's settled in on his haunches, legs tucked under him like an enormous cat, and he's studying me with whirling, calm eyes. His gaze is entirely locked on me. I step away from Mara, testing something, and Vaughn's gaze follows me. Mara, can you go walk across the parking lot? Her face bleaches white.
But you just told me to stay close to you.
I know, but I'm testing how close he's really watching me. We can't be in arm's length of each other always. The look on her face tells me she thinks we can, so I make my expression more convincing, more soothing. I won't let him hurt you, I promise, but we need to test the boundaries.
Can we test after he's used to me being around?
I keep smiling even through my next words. If he's going to attack, it won't matter if it's now or in an hour from now.
It matters to me, she mutters.
She shrugs her nasty clothes tighter around her and pulls a tattered brown hood over her hair, then gives the dragon an uneasy look before taking a few steps to the side. As she does, I wrinkle my nose, doing my best to keep the gesture looking as natural and normal as possible. Vaughn's nostrils flare as he watches me. Keep going, I tell Mara, my voice calm and even as I pretend to study my fingernails. A few more steps outward. I can hear her bite back a frightened moan. She hesitates and then shuffles off to the side. I study my hands a moment more, then look up at Vaughn. His gaze flicks over her and then moves back to me. He's still watching me, waiting. His eyes are swirling with that even color, and that's a good sign. Come shift and sit with me, Vaughn. I sit down where I'm standing and pat the ground, indicating he should join me. It's a gesture he hasn't learned yet, but I'm hoping it's universal. A split second later, the dragon vanishes and a crouching, golden-skinned man rises to his feet a short distance away. That's my Vaughn. He runs a hand through the spikes of his hair, mussing them in a very human-seeming move, and then saunters over to my side and crouches down next to me. The way he crouches leaves a lot of, dangling bits. I smile at him, stroke his arm, and do not look down. He covers my hand where it rests on his bicep, and his fingers tangle with mine. It's the most intimate touch, and I'm entranced by it, and by the smile Vaughn gives me. There's a soft rumble in his chest, and I can practically feel the pleasure he's emanating.
So he really is human?
Oops. For a split second, I'd forgotten Mara was there. I can feel my cheeks getting hot. I'm holding hands, more or less, with a naked man. Awkward. There's a lot I should probably catch you up on. For now, though, Vaughn, Mara, Mara, Vaughn.
Hi, Vaughn, Mara says.
He glances over at her and his lip curls slightly. He gets to his feet and puts a hand to my elbow, helping me up like he has for so many days with my injured hands. Instead of letting me go, though, he holds me close and gazes into my eyes like they're the key to his salvation.
Gwen,
he murmurs, and lightly runs his claws along my jaw. It's like Mara isn't even there. That shouldn't warm my heart like it does, but I'm a petty, selfish woman when it comes to this dragon, apparently. Mara's watching us from a distance, and her eyes are wide. Her gaze slides down Vaughn's body, lingering below the waist. My cheeks get even hotter, because I know what she's looking at. I can feel it prodding against my side.
I don't think he wants you as a friend,
she says dryly. Maybe there's not as much to catch her up on as I thought.
22. Vaughn. My mate is so happy to have the new female here. The new one is not mated. When she stands close to my Gwen, I can smell her mating musk under the layers of filth. It is old and faint, and nearly drowned in the stink of her, but it is there, and it is not touched by another male's fires. Unmated females in a nest are trouble, because other males will want to find her and take her for themselves. At least, they will until they smell her. Then the stench will likely drive any but the most ardent of suitors off. She is not sweet-smelling, like my Gwen. It takes everything I have not to drive her from the camp, but my mate wants her here, and I will do anything to make my female happy. That includes breathing through my mouth. I can always hope another male will show up and claim her, but the stink of her hides her unmated scent far too well. I am more worried about my Gwen's delicious musk attracting another to her. I will fight to keep her at my side if need arises. Just thinking about it makes me flick my claws against a nearby stone. The smelly female shivers. Gwen looks over at me and frowns. I rumble in irritation. The females have been wandering around in the rubble of our old den. The place Gwen and I have slept in for the last few days is destroyed, the roof caved in. I do not recall how it happened. The sight of the destruction worried me, but I can smell no other Draconi scent in the area, and there are distant storm clouds in my memory that tell me I am the one that created this problem. We need a new nest. Every time I shift to battle form, though, Gwen makes unhappy noises and gestures at me until I change back. She does not want me to fly. I change back, and the females fuss over our den, looking for items and putting them in bags. I want to leave, to find a new safe place, but they do not seem to be in a hurry. I scan the skies, looking for other Draconi who might think to approach my territory, but things are quiet. My thoughts are quiet, too. The females babble on in their soft voices, and I ignore the smelly one, listening only to the pleasant sounds of my mate's voice. She sounds lovely and refreshing, like cool water on sun-heated scales, and I try to pick out words I recognize. They speak so quickly to one another that I am not able to understand, so I simply watch my mate's expressive face, memorizing her features. My memory is better when I focus on her. I do not mind this, as she is my favorite thing to watch, to scent, to touch. I fill my senses with her, and when Gwen's bag gets too full, I stride forward, ignoring the cringing, smelly one, and take the satchel from her hands. She looks at me in surprise, and then her pretty lips curve up.
"Vaughn, thank you,"
she tells me, in words that she uses when she is happy. Her eyes are not sweating, but it has been a while since she has had her hair stroked, so I reach out and do so, until I am satisfied that she will not be troubled any longer. I look over at the other female, and hers are watering. Of course they are. She has no mate to stroke her hair. I flex my claws and then close my fist, biting back a shudder. She will have to wait for one. I do not want to touch any female but mine. Gwen notices me looking at the other. She touches my arm, says something too quick and tongue-tangling for me to understand, and then slides her hand along my shoulder as she moves past me. The other female watches me, and it is obvious even to my storm-filled mind what they are thinking. Gwen is being possessive. She is claiming me as hers in front of the other female. It does not matter that we have not mated fully yet, or that she does not smell of my fires. She is showing the other that I belong to her and she belongs to me. My chest puffs up with such pride, such utter joy, that I want to turn my Gwen on her belly and claim her right now. Let the other watch, since it will just stamp into her mind even more that I am claimed. I move forward to take Gwen in my arms, only to notice she is absently rolling one wrapped wrist, as if it pains her. Not yet, then. I can be patient. As long as she claims me in front of the other female, I can be very patient. Rumbling my pleasure, I give my mate a look of promise that makes her cheeks go dark with color. Instead of giving me another touch, though, she moves over to the other female's side and urges her forward. Good. We are finally moving somewhere instead of standing in the rubble. I suppose I can wait a bit longer to tease my mate, then. Gwen and the smelly one walk down one of the long human paths that are littered with weeds and strange-smelling heaps of junk that perch on four dark circles. I shift to battle form and move to scoop up my mate in my claws so we can travel swiftly, but the other female screams in terror, her eyes sweating, and my mate makes the unhappy no noise at me until I shift back. Fine, then. We will walk. I bite back my irritation, because when I shift back to my two-legged form, Gwen touches my arm and makes soothing sounds at me. Clearly, I am a male easily swayed by a pretty mate. I do not mind this, though. Not at all. So we walk. The two females stick to the human paths, weaving between the metal boxes. I stay wide, doing my best to ensure that they are not bothered by other predators, human or otherwise, and keep an eye out for game. They walk so noisily and chatter so much that any game is scared away, though, and by the time the sun goes down, I have nothing to feed my humans. I have smelled things on the horizon, of course, but I will not leave Gwen's side. If she wants me to catch food for her, I will need to shift forms. She knows that, and I wait for her to ask. She does not, though. Instead, they point at a small, squat building in the distance, and it is clear this will be the new nest. It smells of human worse than the last nest. I did not think such a thing possible, but I am learning I have underestimated some humans and their stench. I step in front of the females, growling low at Gwen before she can go through the door and inside the human hive. I have to make sure that it is safe first. Normally the breeze would carry any scents toward me, but the more something smells like humans, the more difficult it is to pick out new scents versus old. I think of a few days ago, when the male was threatening my mate, and anger boils in my gut. I did not smell him because the human aroma was too layered, too overwhelming. I will not let such things happen again. So I go inside first and scan the area. A variety of scents are here, rodents, dust, dead leaves, but the human ones are old and distant. I continue to move through the dwelling just in case, looking for danger. When I am satisfied there is nothing, I return to the front where Gwen and the other female are waiting. Come, I tell Gwen, using her human words. Out of habit, I try to connect my thoughts to hers, but I meet nothing. She has not taken my fires yet. Frustrating to be so close to speaking to her, truly speaking and sharing our thoughts, but to still be so far from it. There will be no mating this night. I can tell just by looking at Gwen that she is tired, her eyelids heavy, her steps slowing. I have been carrying her pack all day, and when she reaches for it, I bare my fangs to let her know my displeasure. She rolls her eyes and bats lightly at my arm, taking it anyhow. She is less and less afraid of me, which I like. And she is touching me again, which I like even more. Gwen takes charge once more, moving ahead of myself and the female, and surveying her surroundings. She picks through two of the rooms before deciding on a third, and then the females both begin to make their individual nests. The small, dirty one gives me worried looks that fuel the predator side of my mind, the part I fight hard to keep under control. I resist the urge to snap my teeth at her and instead focus on Gwen. Gwen with her soft skin and dark eyes. My claws itch to run through her hair, but I tell myself to be patient. It will be time to sleep soon enough. Then I will see if she challenges me with her mouth again. The smelly female sets her bedding down next to Gwen's, thinks for a moment, and then looks at me. When Gwen turns her back, the female picks up her blankets and moves them across the room, as far as she can. She looks at me again, then lies down and pulls the blankets over her head and faces the wall.
23. Gwen. Even though it's humid and warm in the room, Mara gets into bed fully dressed and pulls her blankets, beach towels, really, up to her chin and goes to sleep. I glance out one of the broken, dusty windows of the old bed and breakfast, and it's not quite sundown yet. Maybe she's just tired. I know I am. It's been a long, hot day of walking. The sun beat down on us all afternoon, and with a little breeze to cool us, I've sweated in my t-shirt until it's completely wet against my skin. I feel gross and like I need a shower, but it'd be useless without new clothing to switch into. Several times through the day, I thought about turning to Vaughn and asking him to shift and carry us in flight, but Mara's terrified of him. I didn't want to make things worse than they already are. Plus, there are reasons to keep Vaughn in human form and at my side. A dragon overhead calls all the wrong kinds of attention. Not just human attention, but dragon attention, too. He'd be a beacon for anyone wondering why a dragon's moving through an area and not attacking. And while a dragon can't be hurt by bullets, it doesn't mean that people don't try to shoot them down. And that would mean Mara and I would be in danger of being hit if he was carrying us. Walking gives us time to scavenge and look for food or supplies. More than that, walking gives me long days to watch Vaughn and see how he reacts to Mara's presence. If he can be around her without attacking her and she's not his mate, then that means there's no reason not to go back to Fort Shreveport. And I want to go back. I already feel like I've been away for too long. Vaughn moves restlessly back and forth as I take my time putting together my bed. The floor here is dirty and creaky, and I'm not entirely sure the wood boards are completely stable, but luckily for us, there's an old grade Persian rug holding everything together. Of course, it's also filthy, and so it's not ideal to sleep on either. So I carefully lay out my beach towels until there's a decently clean spot for my bed, and then I stuff a few rolled ones into my backpack to soften it as a pillow. I keep one towel out for a light blanket, but it's so hot I want to strip all of my clothing off as it is and run naked through the streets hoping for a breeze. In fact, the thought of lying down in a bed in this heat with my clothes sticking to my body doesn't sit well with me. I consider my bed, and then glance over at Vaughn. He's watching me intently, eyes whirling, and I feel more restless than ever. He's watching me, not Mara. That's something, at least. My earlier jealousy of her feels foolish, since Vaughn has made it abundantly clear that he wouldn't care if she fell off the earth. I'm an awful person for being so damn pleased with that. After all, I'm not exactly making the moves on him myself, am I? Then again, I'm not exactly pushing him away, either. I'm in a limbo state when it comes to Vaughn. Am I attracted? Yes, far too much. Do I hate that I'm not given much of a choice? Yep. Do I worry what'll happen if I succumb and how it'll affect the people that depend on me back in Fort Shreveport? Oh, yes. I worry about all those things, but little by little, the worries are being resolved. With Mara here and Vaughn tolerating her, I think I'll be fine in the fort. I think I'll be fine with him as my boyfriend, or mate, or whatever you call it. If Vaughn taught me anything while I was injured, It's that he would care for me as intently and as wholeheartedly as Rast cares for Amy. There's so much appeal to that. So what's stopping me from jumping his bones right now? I think I'm afraid. Not of him, but of me fucking it up. Everything I touch seems to go wrong, and I end up only making things worse for everyone around me. I left Fort Tulsa with friends and established Fort Shreveport to make a safe place for families. Fuck that up. I tried to invite all refugees in because I thought at heart people just wanted a safe place to live and raise their children. Fuck that up, too. Dealing with the Brothers of Ash, with Amy and Rast, who I tried to drug and sell out, saving my little sister Daniela, fucked it all up good. I'm pretty sure if given the chance, I'd fuck up Vaughn in ways we haven't even imagined. And something that's supposed to be good and sweet and pure and right will end up being bitter and ugly and hurtful. So I haven't encouraged more kisses. I haven't tried to let him get closer. Even though sometimes I wake up at night with his body pressed against mine and wonder what it'd be like to roll over and kiss him, to rub up against him and let things go as far as they can possibly go. See what happens. Be the dragon's mate. I can't think about it as a betrayal of the human race. I'm too practical. At this point, anyone that would have sold out humanity already did a long time ago and would continue to do so again. I think of Mara with her old abusive protector. I doubt she was with him by choice, but she endured because that's what you do to survive. Am I being a prima donna about things? If I have to be someone's property, isn't it lucky that I'm the property of someone as protective and caring and, okay, hot as Vaughn? I should be thanking my lucky stars. But I can't quite shake the feeling that I'm poison to everything I touch, and that hooking up with Vaughn will be a mistake. Not just for me, but for him. He's gone through so much already, if what Amy has told us about dragons is true. Restless, I gaze down at my bed for a long moment and then pace off to see what the rest of the house has to offer. I don't have to turn around to know that Vaughn is with me. The footsteps behind mine are light for all that he's twice the size of Mara. I just know Vaughn at this point, and I know he wouldn't let me go off on my own. Not because he's controlling, but because he wants to make sure I'm safe. I head into the kitchen of the old house and eye the white and black checkerboard marble tiles wistfully. The tile is filthy, which doesn't bode well for any food to be found, and a quick, cursory look around proves me correct. I turn to go back the way I came and nearly run into Vaughn's chest. No, go in this direction, I murmur to him and give his chest a pat. He looks down at my hand on his chest and grins widely, as if I've pleased him somehow. Weirdo, I tell him, but there's affection in my voice. Come on, let's see if there's anything upstairs. I pass through the busted-up dining area and foyer, Vaughn at my heels, his hand drifting out to touch my arm or my back each time we pass or brush against each other. It's rather nice, and saves me from being creeped out by this place because it looks like a haunted old southern mansion. No thanks. I see an area in the front that looks like a gift shop, but it's been ransacked and destroyed from the elements. It's easy to see why. A tree from the yard collapsed and took out part of the roof here and all of the windows. Nothing salvageable, I murmur.
Nothing,
Vaughn agrees, and I look over at him sharply. He just gives me another toothy smile, and I wonder if he's picking up more than he's let on. He could be a genius, and I'm talking to him in baby-speak English. I narrow my eyes and pat his shoulder absently. Wanna fuck like bunnies upstairs? He rumbles an absent response and yawns, scratching at his chest. Right. Phew. I gotcha. I move to the staircase and eye it unhappily. The stairs are collapsed, and the ceiling's sagging in this area. It would be monumentally stupid to go up those stairs looking for a score.
Stupid,
he agrees. I snort giggle at that and abandon my hopes of finding an untouched closet. Instead, I head down another hall and pass through the rooms again. Behind a dresser, I see another doorway. Aha! The old master bedroom, neatly concealed behind a massive bureau. I tap the heavy wood and look over at Vaughn. Think you can move this aside? He grunts, stepping in front, and with the nudge of one elbow shoves at a foot. Dang. He's strong, even in this form. I give a little shiver, and when he casts a speculative look my way, I pull up my sweat-dampened shirt, pretending it's the heat, and not the naked, gleaming golden body in front of me that's giving me chills. With one more nudge, Vaughn gets the bureau out of the way, and then I can see the doorknob. The door itself is warped from time and damp, and when I brace my shoulder against it to try and push it open, Vaughn growls. His arm links around my waist and he physically removes me, then steps in front and forces the door open with a great crash of his body against it. Well, that's certainly effective. I touch his arm as I walk past him into the room. There's a dusty haze filtering in through the low light, adding a quietly eerie sensation to the room. It feels a bit like a tomb that's been sealed off for ages, but I don't see dead bodies. There's a bed here, covered in a dusty, faded quilt, and flanked by two nightstands. There's a closet and another dresser with shoes neatly lined up on a rack beside it, and a rocking chair with another blanket tossed over it. Everything in here is picture-perfect and organized, as if it's just waiting for the owner to come back. I move forward, drawn to the dresser because I see a picture frame in a jewelry box. I pick up the picture and blow off the dust, revealing a young white couple, a baby perched in the woman's lap. I figured it'd be white people if it was a restored antebellum mansion. Places like these give black people the creeps because the history is remembered very differently. I put the picture back, thinking about the happy couple and their baby. I hope they got out okay. I hope the jewelry box is totally empty because they took everything of value and left for someplace safe. But when I flip open the jewelry box, it's full of rings and bracelets, all slightly tarnished but expensive, and my heart hurts a little. Even a wedding ring is nested in a place of honor, waiting for its owner to return. I close the box again. I love sparkly things, but it feels wrong to take these. They can keep waiting, because I won't touch them. I pull out one of the dresser drawers looking for clothing instead. Well-made clothes that stand the test of time are always useful, and I don't think the people who lived here before would begrudge me a few pairs of jeans or an extra t-shirt or two. Most everything I find is too large, and I'm apocalypse thin, so they'd hang off me. I take a couple of the t-shirts anyhow, and a pair of cut-off jean shorts that look like they might fit, and a bikini top. The clothing sticking to my skin suddenly feels oppressive, and I strip them off, changing into the bikini and shorts and then rubbing the sweat off my body with my old shirt. God, I already feel 100% better. I glance over my shoulder, and Vaughn's watching me with bright gold eyes. He watched me undress. Of course he did. For the last week, he's been pulling my pants down for me. The look in his eyes isn't that of a dispassionate caretaker, though. There's hunger in his gaze tonight, and he's devouring me with a glance. My nipples prick against the soft fabric of the bikini, and I'm acutely aware of him as I move to the shoe rack and pick a pair of sneakers up, pretending to be fascinated by the laces. I'm alone with him right now. I'm wearing a lot less clothing than I usually am. There's a nice big bed. It's like fate's pushing me toward Vaughn with a not-so-subtle nudge. And I'm tempted. I really am. Like, we could just shake the dust off the bed, fluff the pillows, and see how things go. I lick my lips, thinking hard.
Kiss,
Vaughn says suddenly. I tense up, every muscle in my body freezing in surprise. He's thinking the same thing I am. I glance over at him, pretending not to understand. What?
Kiss,
he murmurs. He moves toward me and then lightly brushes the backs of his fingers along my now bare arm.
Kiss me.
Your English gets better every day, I tell him, breathless. Good job. I don't want to look him in the eye because I'll melt into a puddle of girly goo. He moves closer to me, ever closer. That prey feeling rises again, and I feel a bit like a mouse in front of a hungry snake. Except that feels somehow wrong, too, because I don't feel like Vaughn wants to hurt me. Devour me, yes. Hurt me, no. Vaughn takes another step forward. I can move back, of course. There's plenty of space in the bedroom, but I don't. There's a deep, dark part of me that wants to see what happens if he catches his prey. So I remain utterly still, and I wait.
24. Vaughn. I think Gwen does not realize what she does to me. We are here, alone, in a room that is clearly for nesting. One of the human nests is here, the blankets still carrying the scent of old, old matings from long ago. She does not pay attention to this, of course, and instead finds new coverings for her body and strips off her old ones without a thought, bearing her back to me. And I am tempted. So very tempted. This is not like before, when she was hurt and relied on me to care for her. Then it was easy to tend to her body without focusing on the beauty of her form. But now that she is healthy, I cannot stop staring. I watch every little thing she does, absorb every movement, every gesture. I memorize the elegant line of her back, down to the soft curves of her buttocks. My memory may be shattered, but I want to remember this. She turned and glanced over her shoulder once, aware of my presence, and I glimpsed the swells of her breasts. Her body is lovely, golden brown all over, and smoother than the most polished scales. Hunger for her burns in my belly, but I do not touch her right away. I wait to see how she reacts, to see if she gives me her mating challenge as she did before, with the mouth-on-mouth presses. She does not, though, and when her gaze flicks to the door, I grow impatient. I have waited long enough, so I say the human words to let her know my thoughts. Kiss me. Gwen looks surprised to hear me speak. But the expression in her dark eyes grows soft, and just the smallest hint of her mating scent perfumes the thick, still air. It is enough for me. I stride forward and put my hands on her bared waist. Her new coverings only hide the most attractive parts of her, and I am tempted to rip them off and bear her to my gaze once more. Her breathing quickens, her breasts rising and falling rapidly. Vaughn, she whispers. Touch me, I tell her. But when she continues to stare at me without comprehension, I ignore my impatience. Soon. She doesn't pull away from my touch at her waist, and her arousal scent grows thicker. Perhaps with humans, the male is the challenger? I think of the smelly female and how she cowered in front of the male she was with until I devoured him. It is worth testing. I trace my claws up the flat plane of her belly, grazing over her soft skin, and moving upward until I reach the dark band of her breast covering. Her hand immediately goes to shield it from my touch. Don't rip it! No, I ask. Not understanding her words, but grasping the meaning. She wishes for me to stop? Gwen hesitates a moment, and then takes my hand and moves it above the band, back on her skin. Here, not there. Here, I echo, and she nods. She wants my touch, then, just not my claws destroying her new coverings. I understand. I notice the taut points of her nipples under the fabric, and lightly rub a knuckle over one. Here? A low moan escapes her, and her body shudders. She steps closer to me, and it feels like a victory. She likes my touch, wants it. The hunger I carry for her rages like fire, consuming my spirit. I lock my arm around her waist and pull her body against mine. She sucks in a breath, but does not fight, her arms going around my neck. Her eyes meet mine, and even though they do not show her emotions in color, there is no denying the need in them. I will challenge her then, though it feels strange. Twining my claws in the thick tangle of her hair, I tilt her face toward mine. Her breath comes in shallow rasps, but she does not pull away. I tilt my face toward hers and press my mouth against her lips. She tenses against me, so I go still and remain motionless against her, lip to lip. She sighs, and after a moment, she nips at my mouth with hers. "Kiss me," she murmurs, and her lips brush against mine in the lightest, most teasing of touches. I know those words. I copy her movements, caressing and tasting her mouth with my own, our touches playful and flickeringly brief. They are good touches, but so fleeting that they are unsatisfying. I want more. Then she presses her mouth to mine, and her tongue strokes against my lips. And I realize that there is more to this. The touches we have exchanged are a mere flirtation. Tongues are the true battleground. With a groan, I let her take the lead, and Gwen flicks her tongue in the same teasing caresses that she's been giving my mouth, but are totally different now that her sweet, slippery tongue is involved. When it flicks against mine, I feel it in my groin, in my toes, in the very strands of my hair. My world centers around her soft, pink tongue and how she uses it. With little strokes, she tastes me, coaxing and teasing and dancing along mine until I taste her back. Mine is not a gentle tease, though. Mine is a conquering taste of her mouth. I plunder her sweetness with a bold flick of my tongue, licking at her. She trembles against me and lets me take the lead of the kiss. It goes from soft and playful to hot and devouring in moments. And then she's sagging against me, little whimpers of need escaping her throat as I conquer her mouth like I would her cunt. This is not so very different from mating her cunt with my mouth, I decide. I am just mating another soft, juicy part of her. Strange, but equally enjoyable. I lift my mouth when she breaks away from me, panting and dazed. "Vaughn," she whispers, her lips swollen from the constant press of our faces. They are shiny and flushed with color, and I cannot resist licking them again to taste her, and she moans against me, as hungry and full of need as ever. "My Gwen, I like that I can please her with my mouth. It is such a ridiculously simple thing to mate tongues. If she had told me this was what she wanted when she rubbed her mouth to mine, I would have been mating her tongue many, many times this day. I brush my nose against hers, nuzzling her face, and the scent of her arousal wafts through the air, growing stronger by the moment. This pleases her. I rumble with pride at the realization. I can do more to give my mate pleasure. My claws skate up and down her back in the lightest of caresses, as I am mindful of how fragile her lovely brown skin is. She shivers, her lips parting, and she stares hungrily at my mouth, wanting more. I taste her lips once more, and then decide that I want to taste all of her. She is more than just sweet lips, and I would caress all of her with my tongue, if tongue caresses are what she enjoys. I stroke her sides even as I mate her mouth, and then reach for the dark strip of fabric over her breasts again. I tug at the cloth, careful not to rip it. I want to look at her bare skin. I want to put my mouth on it. I want to put my mouth everywhere on her. She whimpers lightly and rakes her nails over my skin. It does not hurt, but I still groan, because I feel the need building in her. It is the need I feel in my belly, the endless hunger that threatens to take over whenever I am around her. Maybe tonight is the night she will let me claim her and give her my fires. I slip the band of fabric down to her belly, exposing her breasts. Her nipples are a delicate, rosy brown, and they tighten as I gaze down at them. She moans, shivering against me. I lightly run my knuckles over one delicate tip and am surprised to see that her skin feels different here. Still soft, but with a unique texture. She is fascinating, my human mate. I trace along the tip, and it grows harder and more erect as I do, and her arousal scent grows deeper as well. With a snarl, I turn our twined bodies and drop us to the top of the human nest. She lets out a gasp as we bounce atop the springy surface, letting up a cloud of dust. I do not care about such things, though. I am too interested in the movement of her breasts, the way they shift and jiggle against me. I caress one soft mound, fascinated by the hard tip, and then lower myself over her until I can rub that mound against my face. She moans loudly then, her back arching and her short, blunted claws going to my hair. I nuzzle at her nipple, teasing it with my lips and then my tongue. It feels strange and forbidden to touch her like this when there has been no challenge, but I can smell her mating scent heavy in the air and know my touch is welcome. I tease her skin, brushing my lips over her until she is squirming beneath me, her breath panting and quick with excitement. My cock aches, as it has never ached before, but my own pleasure is an afterthought. All I want is to please her. I rub my face in the valley between her breasts, fascinated by the way she feels against me. I could spend endless days just touching and caressing her, breathing in her scent like this, holding her against me. The storm clouds that always threaten my mind have rolled back entirely, and my entire focus is on Gwen and Gwen alone. I brush my lips against her skin, and then flick my tongue over the same spot, tasting her. The whimper that escapes her excites me like nothing else, and I redouble my efforts to wring more of those little sounds from her. I lap at her skin, use my tongue to tease lines over her belly, and move lower, because her scent is driving me mad with hunger. I want to bury myself, my face, my tongue, my cock, in the heat of her cunt and the wet wonder of it. My mate, I chant silently. My mate. My Gwen.
Vaughn,
she moans again, her hips undulating under me. I press my face against the rough fabric covering her hips, breathing deeply for a moment before pulling at it. Unlike the soft band over her breasts, it does not give at my touch. Frustrated, I hook my claws underneath the waist and pull. She makes a startled sound and pushes my hands away.
No, Vaughn.
I press my face against her belly in frustration. I know that word. It means she is done. It does not matter that her need is perfuming the air around us, or that I am desperate to give her my fires. The storm clouds in my mind rush forward, drowning out my senses with their furious rage. Anger bubbles through me, piercing the sweetness of her scent. This place stinks of humans. This place stinks of another human. Not my mate, but an intruder. I lift my head, nostrils flaring, and a low growl in my throat. Another female. If she threatens my mate.
Hey, Vaughn!
A female, my female, says. Dimly, I realize she lies under me. Of course she does. How could I forget? Yet even as I think it, I can feel the storms rushing in, sweeping away my grasp on things. I stare down at her. Beautiful. Dark